This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you and me. As I was walking that ribbon of highway, I saw above me that endless skyway. I saw below me that golden valley. This land was made for you and me. There's a big high wall there that tried to stop me. The sign was painted, said private property. But on the back side, it didn't say nothing. That side was made for you and me. In the squares of the city, in the shadow of a steeple, by the relief office, I'd seen my people. As they stood there hungry, I stood there asking, is this land made for you and me? Nobody living can ever stop me as I go walking that freedom highway. Nobody living can ever make me turn back. This land was made for you and me. I thought I'd sing a good old American song since this is the day after our Independence Day. Yeah, another one of those patriotic holidays. Anyhow, I am Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream radio show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's also at revolution.radio and also at newdream.us, our site where we also have our archives, and they're usually not more than 2 or 3 weeks old, and sometimes they're right up to date, so just keep on checking newdream.us. Now don't forget, Revolution Radio is a listener supported network and they deserve your support, so head on over to revolution.radio or freedomslips.com and give them a present. Make them a donation. You'll be glad you did. I am proud now to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Evie Litwack, Ava Bird, Nikki Z, and Phil Ferruccio. So this Thursday evening, we're gathering for the New American Dream Radio Show in Fort Lauderdale, in northern Minnesota, in Port Orange, Florida, in Los Angeles, in New York City, and wherever you are. My recommended, the newest issue of Penn Magazine, now available, the July edition. Find it at penmagazine.us, P-E-N-N magazine.us. You can also find them at archive.org. If you go to archive.org, you get the flip page format, and you just have to go there and search for Penn Magazine, and you can find all the issues of Penn. Were you paying attention to the dude's story? I was bowling. The July issue, Penn Magazine, Wolfgang, Tracy, Lebowski, and Fetzer investigate Sandy Hook. And now we join in progress another episode of The Americans. The Americans is brought to us by Crisis Actors of the Homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater, bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, Charlottesville, and so much more. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns, while the world wails, fists clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and hallelujah. while they sleep on through the alarm, the house of fire. It's true that the newcomers to Washington, D.C. are different than ever before. But after all is said and done, they are Americans. The construction is underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. Beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system and to separate the White House, the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with the message. Let me put it this way. While 9/11 was a U.S. deep state operation, probably subcontracted for execution to the Israelis, the entire Washington swamp has been, since 9/11, accomplice after the fact by helping to maintain the cover-up. If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into the scandal.
The entire White House is getting into the swing of things, preparing for the Space Force of Executive Space Ranger Cosmo Nut. All the White House staff has been strongly encouraged to provide a good example to America and start getting ready for some quality me time in an undiscovered galaxy. It's Jetsons time, baby, says a new refrigerator magnet being handed out to tourists in the White House tour. We rejoin our story and find the White House staff engaged in close quarters battle with the second graders from Mount Chorus Summer Bible Camp at Bob's Batting Cage Wall Climbing Laser Tag and Tattoos. Halfway through their 10 minutes, Bob turns on the smoke machine and cuts the lights, leaving Juice the limo driver and Slappy the house alien trapped in a plastic rock hideout, surrounded by second graders with lightsabers drawn and laser AR-15s firing. Hey, guys, screams Juice, flat on his back trying to reload as he ducks a purple flash of light meant to take off his head. Yo, can you see we're surrounded by these little maniacs, shouts Slappy, as he takes a quick dozen lasers in the stomach. Stay tuned next week when we find Muhammad Ali, the terrorist, the child left behind, Rusty the Patsy, Mama Pajama Jemima, the MK Ultra trainer, and Warren Beatty, the secretary of getting things right. Watching Jews and Slappy get creamed.
Our first guest of the show is Mickey Z. Mickey Z is a writer, poet, and activist, and he's been talking he's been on the project. He's working with the homeless in New York City, and we've been talking about that for a while. And we're going to listen to the conversation right now between Mickey Z in New York City and Chuck Gregory in Fort Lauderdale.
Hey, everybody, it's time to interview Mickey Z, our esteemed columnist from Astoria, New York City. Mick, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's I'm more esteemy at this moment with the weather in New York, but I appreciate the intro.
I see.
I know that's your...
how hot is it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm talking to a Floridian, so whatever's hot to me is probably normal to you. But what we got this week was temperatures that went as high as the mid to high 90s. So, I mean, it's no messing around. But you get this real feel, they call it, in New York that during this week has hovered around between 110 and 112. So it's just in a concrete, packed place like New York, the heat just becomes like concentrated, and in particular in the subways. And any New Yorker could tell you, like, this is, you get at least 1 week a year like this, sometimes more, and you just, there's no, you just kind of just grin and bear it, because there's no relief you'll get until it should be over by Friday. So hopefully that's all you could do is wait it out.
Well, let's see. Today here in Fort Lauderdale, it's 90. Sounds like you have it a little bit hotter than we do.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm assuming that I don't know how long you've lived in Florida, but I'm assuming that you're somewhat acclimated to that temperature. And I guess what gets New Yorkers is that we get these incredible extremes. I mean, you and I will do an interview in January, and I'll be telling you how the real feel is like minus 20. And obviously, you that's not something that you're familiar with. So these extremes give you, I guess you could say, variety, but you never fully adjust, because to go from minus 20 to 112 in terms of real feel, that's pretty dramatic.
Yes, it certainly is. Yeah, we really don't have the extremes. It rarely goes over 95 here, and more typically it's in the 80s. In the winter, we have some days that are maybe in the 40s. Yeah. So.
Okay. That's even lower than I expected you to say, but yeah.
Well, so it's this is the 4th of July, and we celebrate being independent, supposedly. Are you doing anything special up there?
Actually taking it more like a holiday, because as I just said, it's been really hot, and as you know, I'm out on a regular basis doing the work with homeless women and so on. And I just said to myself, I've learned from experience that with this project, that on the big holidays, you know, the Christmases, the Thanksgivings, that the subways run on holiday schedules. The cities have streets shut down for events and parades and so on. And some of the women, one of them told me, for example, yesterday, straight up, that if she could make enough money to have a place to sleep, she wouldn't even be out panhandling today, because it's depressing, because, I mean, their daily life can be depressing. But when you get to these national holidays and people out with their families, spending money, eating, having fun, sometimes it's just it just hits past that threshold that they've created. So I said, if I'm going to take a day to just recoup and get back out there, the 4th of July sounds as good as any to me. So that's what I'm doing.
Well, that
how about you?
We're going to have a little, the apart all the people that live in this little apartment complex. There's 6 apartments in our building. We're having a little get together tonight around 5 o'clock, I think. Some ribs.
Nice.
All that. Yeah, it'll be nice.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But you know, on this, I bet there are some of the homeless aren't out because they have places to go on the 4th. So aren't there some like big dinners or something from the shelters that are available, you know, that they do on holidays?
Yeah, not, I mean, as you might imagine, Thanksgiving, Christmas Day, New Year's Day would be more likely. I mean, it's not more likely, but there'll just be a larger amount of these events to go to, partially right, because of the type of holidays they are. And at that time of year, New York is cold. But yeah, they would have an opportunity to possibly be somewhere and not worry so much about panhandling, because they may get a free meal. And also New York is, you know, there's certain holidays, St. Patrick's Day might be one, a 4th of July, Halloween, where people do also tend to get a little mean-spirited. They get worked up, maybe they've had a little too much to drink, and that's not a good combination, in particular for homeless people, because unfortunately there are a lot of mean-spirited people out there who, when given the opportunity, they're going to kick someone while they're down. So I do I'm not that again that, that's why I kind of said to myself, you know what, if today is the ideal day to not to sit this one out, because most of the women that I know now, I'm doing this for almost 2 years, you know, they're so street savvy, and they know when to be out, when not to be out. And unfortunately, a day like today, it doesn't feel like Independence Day to them, that's for sure.
Right. It feels like a good day for them to disappear.
Absolutely.
Wow. Well, that's, you know, talk about people being mean-spirited. It seems as though that's an increasing trend in the country, or maybe in the world, for people to not be as helpful, to be more me first.
I'd have to say that, empirically speaking, I would agree. I think there's obviously there's so many components. There seems to be an ever increasing political polarization, but I know in my lifetime, one of the most dramatic shifts was the rise and dominance of the internet and then into the smartphone, where people could be mean-spirited with the least possible consequences, where you could be an anonymous person online and say or do almost anything and get away with it and take some kind of perverse pleasure into like really driving someone into an ugly place, and even in some cases as far as someone choosing to take their life. And I feel like what could be a funny concept if it was just done in a lighthearted way, like trolling and having fun online, has become too much accepted. I think people like the spirit of memes and GIFs and so on, quite often isn't there's a line of cruelty or sadism to it that I find disturbing. And what scares me is now that smartphones in their current incarnation are probably about 10 years old. I don't know, you know, I'm not the most tech savvy person, but that would say to me that there's an entire group of people in their late teens and early 20s who have grown up knowing nothing but the smartphone. So therefore they're speaking a language and maintaining a social contract that is dramatically different than it was even just 15 years ago. So I'm not going to say that's the sole reason for it. Obviously, we have dominating oppressive institutions like capitalism and patriarchy and white supremacy and so on that always cause division. But I think on a microcosmic level, I find that people there's been a shift, and you have to really go out of your way to have that face-to-face contact. Like you're talking about having a get-together today with your neighbors. I find that when I hear that, I'm excited to hear that, because it seems like that is becoming more the exception than the rule, to just sit down face-to-face with someone and have a conversation. And you would never be that mean and ugly the way you might be if you were, not you personally, but with someone might be on the internet trolling someone. And I think that unless we maintain some balance of face-to-face interactions, the tendency towards being mean starts to win, unfortunately.
Well, that's interesting. I really hadn't thought of it so much as being tied to the internet. I was thinking more in terms of the, I don't know, kind of, you know, the historical trends where things are, you know, go very much, I don't know, left and then very much right, or whatever, you know, whatever terms you want to use, and feeling that we're in the midst of a shift similar to what might have happened in, say, the 1930s.
Yeah, we'll never downplay that, but I mean let's look at, for lack of a better term, let's call what's going on Trumpism. And obviously Donald Trump is in his 70s, I believe, now, so he's a man who lived the bulk of his life without the internet and without a smartphone. But if there's anyone who has come to epitomize an internet troll, it's him. I mean, his Twitter account is something that you and I could have never fathomed if we were having this conversation 15 years ago. if one of us was going to write a dystopian science fiction novel, one of us still wouldn't have come up with some kind of platform like Twitter in which a billionaire businessman becomes president and uses Twitter to make fun of people and call them fat or ugly. I mean, so he's legitimized, for lack of a better word, that avenue of communication too. So I think the part that I mentioned about the internet and the part that you mentioned about historical trends is dovetailing in a very dangerous and ugly way.
Rather like the perfect storm.
Yeah. And you know how that movie ended. So
yeah, right. That seems about where we're headed. No, I hope not. It's strange times, interesting times, right?
To say the least.
Well, let's see. I think we've managed to use up most of our time as usual. So, if you would remind people where they can find you with your Helping Homeless Women NYC, and then we'll have to sign off.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Well, exactly what you said, the Helping Homeless Women NYC for New York City. There's a GoFundMe page and there's a Patreon page. On Facebook, I'm under the name Mick Zizima, Z-E-Z-I-M-A, and my page is public. And so any of those avenues, or just type in Helping Homeless Women NYC into your nearest search engine, and you'll find the project that I'm working on here in the city. And any and all help is appreciated, and even a dollar helps. And if you don't have money, just if you could share the link and with folks who might be potential donors, it would be amazing. Because as you might imagine, in weather like this, just simply being out there on the streets with bottles of water and sunscreen can be literally life-saving. And I'm happy to do this work, but I can't do it without the support of good folks willing to back me up.
Well, all right. Thanks once again. I always look forward to these visits. And hey, we'll talk to you next month.
Same here, and enjoy your get-together later on.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Moonrock Books. We're a group of scholars, experts, and authors who feel the world really needs saving and that resisting the American Empire is the right thing to do. People are starved for truth. They are given lies. They subsist on lies, but it's not really living. People are not watching TV news. They're ceasing to read newspapers, too, because they know by now they will not find it there. The biggest battle being fought anywhere is with information. If the people can receive the truth, they will do the right thing. We are publishing the truth about Sandy Hook, about the Boston bombing, about the moon landings, about the Holocaust, and much, much more. The truth. It falls upon us to fight the empire and save the world. Join us, Moonrock Books.
Born down in a dead man's town. First kick I took was when I hit the ground. You end up like a dog that's been beat too much till you spend half your life just covering up. I was born in the USA. Born in the USA. Born in the USA. Born in the USA. Got in a little hometown jam, so they put a rifle in my hand. Sent me off to a foreign land to go and kill the yellow man. Born in the USA, I was born in the USA. Come back home to the refinery, hiring man says if it was up to me. Went down to see my VA man. He said, son, don't you understand? I had a brother at K-9 fighting off a Viet Cong.
Inside Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Now we join in progress another episode of 1984-ish, The Adventures of Jesus H. Christ in America. We find Jesus H. Christ seated on the curb with many of his co-workers at the downtown parade. As the music begins to play and everyone up and down the street stands up for the flag and the tank and the soldiers carrying the gun, one of Jesus H. Christ's co-workers tugs on his arm. Come on, it's the flag. It's the 4th of July. It's the army. Get up. No, I'm good, said Jesus H. Christ, as he continued to sit on the curb, resting his arms on his knees. Stay tuned next week for another episode of 1984-ish, The Adventures of Jesus H. Christ in America. Sponsored by Holy Mackerel Olive Oil in the 64-pack. In the big brown box. Our next guest of the evening is Philip Ferrugio, who joins us from Port Orange, Florida each week with It's the Empire, Stupid.
Okay, here we go. Here we go. Well, the day after July 4th, hijacking my flag. You know, as a baby boomer has seen lots of instances of the empire using my flag as their own private property, this newest one takes the cake. I mean, my generation went through the whole America love it or leave it rhetoric during the Vietnam debacle. Many of us, either old or new to activism, just tossed that aside as bullshit. Yet a majority of my friends and neighbors unfortunately bought into the hype and spin that the flag and our national anthem were to be sacrosanct, beyond reproach. Many anti-war demonstrations actually had our flag burned, which this writer did disagree with as a tactic of protest. The more powerful and thought-provoking protest would be to turn the flag upside down to reveal the upside-down manner of this empire. As with Alice in Wonderland, the opposite was usually correct in many instances. How it sickened me and many others when we turned on the boob tube to watch Bob Hope entertaining our soldiers in the Nam, as if this was World War II all over again. In Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now, 79, he has that scene reminiscent of those Bob Hope visiting the troops with lots of tits and ass, which revealed the perverted sense of what phony wars can do to soldiers. Check out that scene. Ever since the Cheney Bush gang, yes, we who know better realize that Cheney was a controller and Junior, the idiot emperor with no clothes. Ever since they lied and deceived us into this new war on terror, they held our flag hostage. They had the suckers, saps, and lollipops hanging over garage doors in my neighborhood or on their cars and trucks, lots of pickups where I live in bushland, making it the phony symbol of patriotism. How many dead or wounded for life soldiers and how many of the same by a factor of 10 times Iraqi and Afghan civilians before our foolish neighbors realized the truth? Sadly, most of them never did. Thus, this phony, quote, war on terror goes on and on, always with new and more dangerous enemies as the flag waves on. This empire is so smoothly diabolical. July 4th, once again, we celebrate our independence from Britain. It's really counterfeit on many fronts. Researchers like Dean Henderson, who I interviewed recently, can give interesting and concise accounts of how our nation never was freed from the influence of England and its infamous City of London, the banking bandit center of the world. His book, The Federal Reserve Cartel, 2014 edition, covers most of the information. Now, the second counterfeit point is that the celebration of not only our flag, but our military in this current climate of empire is unpatriotic. No, to celebrate our great flag and our military is to have this empire pulled back and save our nation from the fiscal and moral bankruptcy that is approaching. To paraphrase the late, great Malcolm X from one of his fine speeches, many of my good and decent friends and neighbors have been, quote, bamboozled, conned, and led astray, unquote. A true Independence Day would be a great awakening from the greedy and evil ones who run this empire and the many others who serve it. Thank you. Happy July 5th.
And our thanks to Phil. And now it's time for talk time. This is something new I thought we might try. Usually Chuck and I don't do this. We're going to take time to comment on current events. Usually we let our columnists do that, but I think it's something we might give a try. This is when we invite our listeners to contact the show by email, chat room, telephone, telegraph, and telepathy. So if you're going to contact us by telepathy, go ahead. Here we go. We are open to listening. And also, if you want to write to us your comments and questions to nwestiowa@gmail.com or cwg@cwgservices.com. Again, we're going to look for your comments by email at nwestiowa@gmail.com or cwg@cwgservices.com. Are you there, Chuck?
I'm here, Mike.
Well, the idea that, you know, usually we take the stance of, you know, the conspiracy theories, and I still feel that way, that we need to talk about 9/11 and Boston and Sandy Hook and everything. But also, I want to say that I think we're both proud liberals or something, maybe not Democrats. I don't know how that goes. And I used to always go to the Common Dreams website years and years ago. And I kind of stopped doing that. And I went back there and they, even though liberals or Common Dreams, they somehow, for some reason, don't want to confront so-called conspiracy theories. They seem to be very afraid of them. You know, they don't, maybe haven't done their homework. They're just afraid of what people would say about them. But, you know, in my mind, all it takes is a little study. And I think that the truth about 9/11 stops the war. That is the revolution. And for some reason, people who the type of folks who would go to Common Dreams don't want to do that, to take that step, maybe just to do the work or to take the risk. But in any case, they talk about a lot of good stuff at Common Dreams. And what got me thinking about this was I was on a guest on a radio show on Monday, and the host was talking about immigration, which is in the news a lot lately, and ICE, and about separating families. And the host took I was surprised by the stand that the host took, in that he was asking me if I thought ICE should be abolished, if I thought that we should let people come into the country. And my reaction was, yes, abolish ICE. And I'm so glad that somebody's even got that, is even thinking about that. And I'm for open borders, and this person didn't want to hear that. But my take on that is that I think open, you know, we all came from somewhere, you know, and to say that we're not going to let people in now, I think that's hypocritical on one point. And also, if you drive around America, there's like a church on every street corner, and we're not going to help people who are poor. We're going to say, no, this is only how much we can do. And I don't know what it would do to our economy or whatever, but we might. I think, you know, we spend trillions of dollars on the military. Why, you know, we just have to. The world is waiting for us to be some. I don't know, to be something. The world is waiting for us to have one good idea and to not be evil, I guess. And I think we need to stop spending money on the military. And yes, we need to help people. And why not abolish ICE? And I don't know if you have anything to say about that.
Well, I'm definitely with you on this one, Mike. A lot of the social interaction, some political interaction that I have is on Facebook as well as, you know, in person. But I tell you, every time I have brought up the idea of open borders, either in a Facebook group or with personal friends, I have been ridiculed. I mean, that's one that gets you shot down real quick. But yeah, I really believe that the border should be open. That even the statistics show that most of the crime or whatever, it's not committed by the immigrants. It's committed by us. You know, and of course, then there's the whole question of crime and prisons and how we've locked up, so many people. I mean, the incarceration rates from the time that, say, we were growing up in the 60s or 70s until now, it's just gone up by an incredible amount. We lock up more people than any other country in the world. And it's just ridiculous. It's all for profit. We've turned the prisons into profit centers. And
remember, listeners can contact the show by email, chat room, telephone, telegraph, and telepathy. And you can write to us at nwestiowa@gmail.com or cwg@cwgservices.com. Go ahead, Chuck.
Well, that's okay.
You're talking about locking people up.
Yeah, well, that's about where I was. That's about as far as I was going to go right now. But it's just I do hope that we'll get to talk a little bit more like this each week and get some responses from listeners. And I've got my email open, but nobody sent us anything. But
I'm not getting anything. You getting anything by telepathy? I'm not getting anything.
I don't know.
There's nothing in my head.
Open that thing up. I have trouble listening. There's so much noise going on in my head. It's pretty hard to listen and actually pick up something from people.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm just wide open, but I've just got nothing up there. Okay. Do you want to say this is a good trial here, and should we go to the next guest?
I think maybe that's a good idea.
Okay.
Let's move on there. Our next guest normally would be Azura Crispino, and she's not able to join us tonight, but she called in a favor, and we're going to have the pleasure of talking to Evie Litwack, and I'm going to call her right about now, and we'll get her to introduce herself. So
she's also in New York City, right, Chuck?
Yes, she is in New York City.
Okay.
She was on our show another time. She's a witness to mass incarceration. And she has some very interesting things to say, I'm sure.
Hello,
Evie. This is Chuck Gregory and Mike Palachek, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
Hi, thanks. So I appreciate hearing from you, and where would you like me to begin tonight?
Well, you brought up a couple of topics. Just go right ahead.
Launch into them. Okay, so my name is Evie Litwack. I am a formerly incarcerated Jewish lesbian. I spent time in two federal prisons and solitary confinement, and I went into prison at age 60. I was released from prison 4 years ago, so at 60, I re-entered the free world when I was 64 years old, and I was homeless and penniless, but determined after my prison experiences to spend the rest of my life advocating to abolish mass incarceration, because even though I was a baby of the women's movement, the gay rights movement, civil rights, and even though I was a 30, 40-year activist, I did not realize how bad things were for people of color until I was inside prison, and I didn't realize that we were criminalizing so many people who were poor, homeless, and people of color until I got inside prison. It was an education that I would not have had I not been incarcerated myself. So I formed Witness to Mass Incarceration, which is a storytelling and organizing archival project that documents the stories and experiences of formerly incarcerated women and LGBTQ people for the purpose of reducing the number of incarcerated and criminalized people in prisons, jails, lockups, juvenile and immigration detention centers. The reason I believe, or the inspiration for forming a digital library or creating a digital library, comes from a very personal experience. My parents are Holocaust survivors, and I watched them talk to teenagers and young adults their entire lives, speaking to make sure that people understood the horrors of the Holocaust so that it wouldn't happen again. And my mother began each talk, you know, by saying, "I am a witness to the Holocaust," and she ended each talk saying, "You are the generation that has to do something about it." And I start my talk as a witness to mass incarceration, and I speak primarily at universities, and I also speak at synagogues, and I look at the audience and I said, we can't, formerly incarcerated people and their allies cannot do this alone. We cannot end this vicious cycle without you. And for those in college, you are the ones that are going to change this horrific situation. Witness has several initiatives. One of the most important ones is based on my experience. It's called the Suitcase Project. When I was let out of prison, they put me on a Greyhound bus. I drove in that bus for like 17 hours to get home. It was a hard experience. I ended up in Port Authority in New York with no one to greet me, no one to meet me, and had to go to a halfway house because I was homeless and penniless and remained that way for 16 months. When a friend finally found me, he said, "What do you need?" I said, "I need a pen and a piece of paper to write on. I need shampoo. I need toiletries. I have no clothes." And luckily for me, he lived close enough to where I was so he could bring me some supplies. So the suitcase project is me asking faith-based groups. My initial focus is synagogues because I speak at them. I'm asking them to collect $2,000 for one suitcase for one newly released person. And that suitcase will contain a cell phone with minutes for a year, because that's the only way you can communicate or receive a phone call for a job, a laptop computer so that they can look for work and connect to the world, and an $800 certificate to Target or a place where they can get clothes and toiletries. And we will meet them and greet them in the city they come in. And I will have different synagogues from across the country be doing this. And this project is actually starting next week. We hope to meet and greet our first recipient of a suitcase within the next, 2 months, perhaps October. In order to know who's coming out of prison, there's no list of who's coming out of prison. It's a fairly, for security reasons, there's no risk. So I have to be in contact with federal prisons, which I am, and I have to ask them to take my suitcase project posters and post them inside prisons for people to see. And it's going to say the Suitcase Project, if you're coming out within 3 to 6 months, please write witness2mi@gmail.com. And we will answer you and try to hook you up with a congregation and a suitcase. Now, I only have about 20 synagogues lined up, but I know for sure that the minute that these posters go up inside the federal women's prisons, that I'll have 1,000 people wanting a suitcase and 1,000 people ready. So it's going to be exciting to try to find the people to give the suitcases, to hook up the people who are providing the suitcase with the people who are getting them. I think that's going to be exciting, and I'm going to videotape that experience. And it's a missing piece for people who are coming home, particularly people who have no money. So this way, maybe... you're not traumatized the way I was when I ended up in Port Authority feeling overwhelmed by being in the free world again, a friendly face to meet you, and maybe a connection so that you have the beginning of community. So I'm very excited about that project. Should I continue?
Please do. I'm very curious about this project, and I will be very interested to hear what the if the response is as you think. So many people, I wonder.
Go ahead.
Okay, I wonder if prisoners are leery of just about anything that gets posted on the walls and don't want to have anything to do with anything that they hear while they're in there.
Well, actually, remember, we're a small universe of people that kind of know each other. So Witness to Mass Incarceration is... let me start by saying there's a universe of nonprofits that serve formerly incarcerated people that really don't do much for us. They don't do what we need them to do. They do what they want to do, which is provide you with a resume, 2-week employment training, learn how to do an interview, give you a hot meal, and then you're gone. What we need is jobs, housing, and help with the post-traumatic prison stress, and they don't deal with that at all. So who they look to and who they communicate, who we communicate with literally every day, is each other. So formerly incarcerated women who are working around the country on the federal level and on the state level know each other. And they talk to incarcerated people. So once witness goes up, people will know that it's one of their own. And as a group, we know the experience that each other has. And we trust each other in a way that you only trust someone that's been through hell. So my parents trusted primarily Holocaust survivors to help them when they started and had $2 in this country. And formerly incarcerated people are trying to help incarcerated people who are being released. So they will not be suspicious about me. The bigger concern would be, where are they going and can they keep what we give them safe so that it doesn't get stolen? You know, because they're relatively homeless and they generally get a locker at a home and a homeless shelter. So that my concern is more like, I hope that they can hold on to these gifts and not have it stolen. But I have no concern because I'm a known quantity, or rather witness is a known quantity. And will I have that kind of response? Yeah. No one has ever offered to give. If someone offered to give you $2,000 worth of products and a suitcase and meet you, and you have spent the last 3 years scrubbing floors and offering to wash other people's underwear in order to be able to get a little extra coffee or get a piece of cheese instead of the crap you eat, you know that it's a formerly incarcerated person, you're gonna jump at the chance. Because there's a network.
Okay.
Anyway, any other questions on that?
Well, no, fielded that one very well. And yeah, I guess what you mentioned about some of the other organizations wanting to do what they wanted to do instead of what was really needed. And I had just been wondering how prisoners were going to know that you weren't one of them. But you answered it very well. It's basically... there's like almost a network. You know, you've been there, and people remember you, and so forth.
And we know each other. Like if I get a phone call, I'm on a lot of working groups. I have a grant. Witness has a grant to convene 10 formerly incarcerated LGBTQ people who have been sexually assaulted, abused, or harassed in prison in order to help the Department of Justice PREA Resource Center lessen the amount of sexual violence in prison. I'm hearing loud noises.
But that music means that our time is up. Thank you so much for joining us again on the show, and I hope we'll get to talk again.
Okay, thank you.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exo Politics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Steyer will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
At the end of the last half hour, we didn't get a chance to tell you to, if you'd like to join Evie's mailing list, text WITNESS to 83224. And then you can find out lots of things about what she's doing. Thank you. All right, our next guest of the evening is Abba Bird. Abba Bird was one of our very first guests on the first show, I believe. And she's a poet from California and an activist and just a real nice person. And we are very lucky to have her on our show. And I'm going to call her right now. It's thinking about it. Well, I might have to try this again. I may be using the wrong contact. Let me try this again a different way. Sorry about this, folks. Too many moving parts, you know. That sounds more like it.
leave your message for 424-200-4334.
Well, we're just not having much luck getting hold of Baba, but let's try it one more time.
Please leave your message for 424-200-4334.
Mike, maybe you should do a little thing while I try
to
get hold of her.
Chuck, do you have two numbers for her or one number?
Yeah, well, one of them was a Skype contact and the other was her number. I'm going to try texting and all right now, so why don't you just...
It would be a little bit tough to go on and then cut back to her. Let's just stick with you and see what we can find out.
And please, everyone, be patient. I'm trying.
Yeah, we're good. We're good. Let me see. I'm juggling right here, but I don't know if you can see it or not. Now I'm tap dancing. Juggling, tap dancing at the same time. Penn Magazine, I talk about that. Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N magazine.us. In this newest edition, it's been out for 2 weeks now. You can see the new findings by Wolfgang Halbig regarding Sandy Hook. Also writings by Jim Fetzer. I think it's important stuff. And like I mentioned before, I would hope that the people who go to the commondreams.org website, who do so much good stuff, they would just take time to go over this type of information, especially Sandy Hook and 9/11 and Boston and the others.
Hi, Chuck and Mike.
Hello, Abba. We had a little challenge getting to you today, but we got you. So welcome to the show.
Cool. Thanks. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I have a couple of poems that I'll share. I have several new ones. This one is called Waiting in Purgatory. And so it sits. It sits there like a pet, waiting at home in this space, this old room, the stale smoke. Smell stuck and the ghost energies surrounding me while I wait. This bubble of purgatory, the waiting room, the bitch fits, the holding tanks, these things, these box springs, poking sharp pains over late nights and big plans, big falls and big pains. Should have known better, the message in the mess. Shouldn't have gone out that night, could have stayed home. Could have been doing yoga, but twisted into wondering, pondering, lust, rage, jealousy, having these thoughts of strange past days, stays in the present, stay in the moment, stay here tonight, stay here now, be here right now, and then hit the road in the evening, think about it and come back, be back later with groceries and herbs and flowers, water and food of the mother. I love my mommy. I love my mommy Earth, this Mother Gaia, this beautiful planet, this amazing place of great green and blue and green and everything in between and beyond. So out there beyond comprehension, our galaxies, our big, big world and universe and multiverse. And here I sit, stuck in purgatory, waiting on someone who will never come. All right. That was called Waiting in Purgatory. And this is called You Who. They were the walking zombies, the hungry ghosts, the waddling. There were sodas and smells of rotten flesh burnt and loud noises coming from the masses of asses full of lies from the Matrix establishment. They stare at the fireworks, dip shit in the dips, eat and shit. They stare at the TV sets like aliens, slaves, illegal like rainwater and plants, but mercury and fluoride in water. I mean, come on, man. You, with the eggs from other animals and milk pus from sacred cows, so 500 pounds of you with the remote control controlling the masses with prescription of pills and TV sets, screaming, spewing porn in the slave streets and violence. You turning it on for the cable companies. You paying them to destroy you, your mind and spirit and body too. Woo-hoo. Why do the masses flock like bleary-eyed deer sheep to the slaughter of burgers, unhappy meals for dollars, of murder and torture and blood on your hands and in your esophagus, stomach acids burning from screaming cows and chickens. It's all in us. We are what we eat, and you learned it early, so we know already. So what's up with the GMOs and OMG and what the fucks? Fake food for the masses again. They must rise up and say, what the fuck again, man? Time to get off and do something real. Or are we really that dumb? You, the women who give birth, make sure to tell them no murder, no genital mutilation, no burning holistic doctors, no witch hunts over natural cures, no pills to pop over odd behavior. Let them be. Let them be free. Let them play. Let us all play together as one big happy orchestra where everyone is playing and dancing. It's so much more fun when everyone is part of it. Instead of just 1%, we all want the same things and basic necessities to live well and be happy and be full of liberty and justice for all beings. May all beings be happy and free, and may all beings be free of invasions, freedom and peace for all beings and things. Okay, that was called You Who. How many more can I do? I have two more. I don't have to do both of them if we're running short on time.
You can do at least one.
Okay. How about this is called Happy About No Thing.
I think there will be time for both, Ava.
Okay. Neither of them are that really long. I would say, like, it might be 2 minutes each or so. Okay, good. Happy About No Thing. It's time. Big bright. Big city. Big lights. And crazy nights. Flying free. Sitting pretty. In the hills. Lost. In the woods. In the hoods of fame and time and homes. For no one less than coming from us with love and more. With freedom of thoughts and actions. Always upcoming. The next big things are happening right now. Right? And left are only two ways to go. Let's go out more. Let's get out and do it upright. Left turns on arrows, even when no one's coming. Let's go out into the lights, sailing through green lights, smiling, happy about things like no things, no thoughts or actions, stillness and reception. Ah, so nice after the bustle of city highs and fun times in the sun. Happy about no thing. Okay, so how about this last one? Is that okay? It's pretty short. It's called Angels with Names. The angels have names. I know them. They shimmer like stars, like whispers. They come and visit. They are connected, all working together to bring light, to share light, to burst like a star and disappear quick, like a flash, like something barely seen, just a quick, bright flicker, an ephemeral visitor, these angelic starlings, smiling down, leaving happy dust, leaving traces of seraphic reminders to remember who's around, We are your ancestors, guiding. Remember who's watching and waiting, blending and helping save, landing in divine intervention. O holy heavenly, pick me up and drop me off to safety. These celestial, exalted, illuminated beings looking out for me, remembering the divinity in me, sparking the luminosity in me. And we together connected, these angelic, radiant beings, crystalline energy seen, felt, and these pure messengers of sparkling light. Okay, that was called Angels with Names. It's all the angels out there. So I just want to thank you again for having me and letting me read my poetry and sharing that with you. And all the fun, all the good work that you do.
Well, thank you, Ava. Those were beautiful, really. Before you go, please tell us if you have any events coming up. Are you know, you're reading anywhere? Where can people find you or your books?
Well, I have a show. Thanks for asking, Tuck. I have a show coming up in July 18th at Flappers Comedy Club. It's a comedy show. That would be great if people are invited to come to that. And I'm working on some new books coming out. And I look forward to sharing that with you guys. Just overflowing with words. So thank you for letting me share a little.
Okay. Thanks again. We really enjoy having you on all the each month.
Fun to share the poetry. I'm glad you enjoy it and appreciate it. Keep up all the great work, and I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, the World Cup is attracting a lot of attention these days. The Bubbas are watching the World Cup at Bill's Bar and Bait Shop with the RV parked outside. Yay for the British Bubbas and all that. But there's also Wimbledon, and we have heard again from Randall from Stevens Point, sitting in the sun in the stands at center court. He whispers, I got my gun, my dog, and my truck. I'm heading for the woods and up the mountain. Tell Bubba Jean I always loved her. Don't follow me. I got on my camo socks. You'd never find me. Some of the Brits turn around and put their fingers to their mouths to shush him. When you hear about the big shootout and all that, then that'll probably be me. And I just got one thing to tell my relatives in Baraboo, and that's I'm really not talking to any of you because you know why. And as the tennis match continued, Randall from Stevens Point ducked behind his tee and strawberries to continue his report.
July 4 is Matrix Reinforcement Day. July 4, 2018 is the 242nd anniversary of the date chosen to stand as the date the 13 British colonies declared independence. According to historians, the actual date independence was declared was July 2, 1776, with the vote of the Second Continental Congress. Other historians have concluded that the Declaration of Independence was not actually signed until August 2. For many living in the colonies, the event was not the glorious one that is presented in history books. There was much opposition to the separation, and the Loyalists were killed, confiscated, and forced to flee to Canada. Some historians explain the event not as a great noble enterprise of freedom and self-government, but as the manipulations of ambitious men who saw opportunity for profit and power. For most Americans today, the 4th of July is a time for fireworks, picnics, a patriotic speech extolling those who fought for our freedom and for those who defended it in wars ever since. These are feel-good speeches. Most of them make very little sense. Many of our wars have been wars of empire, seizing lands from the Spanish, Mexicans, and indigenous tribes. The U.S. had no national interest in World War I and very little in World War II. There was no prospect of Germany and Japan invading the United States. Once Hitler made the mistake of invading the Soviet Union, the European part of World War II was settled by the Red Army. The Japanese had no chance of standing up to Mao and Stalin. American participation was not very important to either outcome. No 4th of July orator will say this. It's unlikely anyone will make reference to the 7 or 8 countries that Washington has destroyed in whole or part during the 21st century, or to the U.S. overthrow of the various reform governments that have been elected in Latin America. The 4th of July is a performance to reinforce the matrix in which Americans live. When the 4th of July comes around, I reread the words of U.S. Marine General Smedley Butler. General Butler is the most highly decorated U.S. officer in history. By the end of his career, he had received 16 medals, 5 for heroism. He's one of 19 men to receive the Medal of Honor twice, one of only 3 men to be awarded both the Marine Corps Brevet Medal and the Medal of Honor, and the only to be awarded the Brevet Medal and 2 Medals of Honor, all for separate actions. Butler served in all officer ranks that existed in the U.S. Marines of his time, from second lieutenant to major general. He said that during that period, I spent most of my time being a high-class muscle man for big business, for Wall Street, and for the bankers. In short, I was a racketeer, a gangster for capitalism. Butler says he was a long time escaping from the matrix, and that he wishes more of today's military personnel would realize that they are being used by the owning elite as a publicly subsidized capitalist goon squad. Butler wrote, "War is a racket. It always has been. It is possibly the oldest, easily the most profitable, surely the most vicious. It is the only one international in scope. It is the only one in which the profits are reckoned in dollars, the losses in lives. A racket is best described, I believe, as something that is not what it seems to the majority of the people. Only a small inside group know what it is about. It is conducted for the benefit of the very few, at the expense of the very many. Out of war, a few people make huge fortunes. A few profit and the many pay. But there is a way to stop it. You can't end it by disarmament conferences. You can't eliminate it by peace parleys at Geneva. Well-meaning but impractical groups can't wipe it out by resolutions. It can be smashed effectively only by taking the profit out of war." November 1935, Butler wrote in Common Sense magazine, "I spent 33 years and 4 months in active military service, and during that period, I helped make Mexico and especially Tampico safe for American oil interests in 1914. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys to collect revenues in. I helped in the raping of 6 Central American republics for the benefit of Wall Street. I helped purify Nicaragua for the international banking house of Brown Brothers in 1902 to 1912. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for the American sugar interests in 1916. I helped make Honduras right for the American fruit companies in 1903. In China in 1927, I helped see to it that Standard Oil went on its way unmolested. Looking back on it, I might have given Al Capone a few hints. The best he could do was operate his racket in 3 districts. I operated on 3 continents." The military security complex about which President Eisenhower warned Americans 57 years ago adroitly uses the 4th of July to portray America's conflict in a positive light in order to protect its power and profit institutionalized in the U.S. government. In stark contrast, by the end of his career, General Butler saw it differently. "Washington has never fought for freedom and democracy, only for power and profit." Butler said, "There are only 2 things we should fight for. One is the defense of our homes, and the other is the Bill of Rights."
And now for another episode of The Adventures of deputy and candidate for sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Hugh Twinkle. Buddy is usually patrolling the War on Terror Memorial Highway in South Central Alabama. He's usually sitting in a grove of trees next to a rotting deer carcass, can't see a thing. But he can hear that the highway is packed from all the noise. He usually cranks the Bolshoi Ballet in his earbuds as he snacks on the boiled potatoes he brought from break time, and also sneaks a peek at the crayfish buckwheat blintzes he packed for his lunch. He's usually got his personal phone pressed to his ear, waiting for a call to St. Petersburg to go through, and the scanner is running, waiting for a message from the Kremlin.
But now he's on summer vacation. He's been driving from Branson, Missouri, to the Black Hills and to Yellowstone, and then he drove all the way to Washington, D.C. in the squad car with the lights flashing, because he can. He drives slow on the interstate in the left-hand lane, all the way, all the way. In Washington, he went right to the White House, stood in front by the fence, and the troops and the drones, missiles, barbed wire, trenches, mustard gas, and tanks, and hauled about 20 signs out of his trunk, set them up in front of the fence. His sign said, 9/11, Syria, ISIS, Bob Qaeda, Al-Qaeda, JFK, Boston, Sandy Hook. It's all related. It's all a trick. You are being fooled. Buddy is a Russian spy. Stay tuned for next week's episode of The Adventures of Deputy and Candidate for Sheriff of Pecan County, Buddy Q. Twinkle, sponsored by Lemon Fresh Borax. Also sponsors of On Babushka Kalashnikov's Corner, The View from My Piroshki Cart. When Your Dogs Tell You the Russians Pooped in the Hallway While You Were at Work, and the Democrats Tell You No, We Didn't Rig the Elections Against Bernie Sanders. We did not commit treason, dozens of felonies, we didn't conspire against the American people. Look over there, Russians! We're there for you, protecting the homeland. Lemon Fresh Borax in the fading yellow box.
Find some comfort at Willow's World. A variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow, Monday, 6 to 8 p.m. EST, Studio B.
Baby Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern Studio A.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Well, it's been another long week in Moonrock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. Somebody must have been telling lies about Joseph K., for without having done anything wrong, he was arrested one fine morning. That's Franz Kafka. Wednesday afternoon, dear editor, there's a church that I pass oftentimes when I go for drives in the country when the town gets to be too much. For some reason, I expect the country to be different. It fools me every time. There's this church and a nice lawn and a flag and one of those glass-enclosed signs. You know, tells when the services are, gives a little quip for the week. Some churches change them often. Some leave the same one up all winter. Maybe it's too cold to stand out there and try to get those magnetic letters to stick. Maybe. Anyway, they could say so much with those things, but they don't. They stay uber-patriotic and American, which is to say, not very Christian, which is depressing, disheartening, defeating, disappointing. I wonder if the people who go to church here feel the same. I wonder if they drive to town just to see if there's anything different to be found anywhere. You couldn't tell by looking at me that I'm a stranger in my hometown. What's it like to walk around my town and be a dissident? Well, let me tell you. Oh, you don't agree with my terminology? You don't like that I use dissident? You prefer I use unemployed? Some other word that would say I'm different, out of touch perhaps, because of my own fault? You want me to feel bad about who I am rather than tell you that you are the one in the wrong? I won't. Dissident. The word stays. I stay. I'm a social deviant, perhaps. That's what they might call me in a first-year psych course at the community college. Someone not abiding by society's norms, customs. But I'm more than that. I'm someone willing to fight, and for that I claim political status. There's no embassy for me to run to. I sit alone in my kitchen drinking reheated coffee. I stamp the cup down on the table and claim it. I write a letter to the editor, and my neighbor looks away even more deeply into his garden as I walk out my door toward the front walk. The mailman is coming, and I wait for him. He pulls his truck to a squeaky stop in front of my home. I prepare a quip about the brakes on his buggy. He seems embarrassed to see me, then slips the mail into my hand with a hurried comment on the weather and scurries off, and I see I will have to have plenty of time to refine my joke. I leap through the mail, stuff it under my arm, then walk down the street looking at the driver of every car that passes. Maybe I know them. Each one stares intently ahead. They're all excellent drivers. I walk downtown into the cafe looking for friendly eyes. My best friend from the high school basketball team, well, not that I played, but he did, gives me a kind of nod as he finds a way around me. I decide I'm not hungry, turn to go out. I follow my own footprints to walk home. I don't bother to check who's driving past. I don't look to see who is out and about, sitting, standing, gabbing, staring straight ahead. I walk faster. I pull up to my house just as my neighbor puts a full garbage bag over his shoulder to take to the alley. I don't bother to try to catch his eye. No over the shoulder, how you doing, wave? Not this time. Not anymore. I turn in at my house, push inside, drop my mail on the floor by the door, sit in my big chair. I stare straight. I sit there for a few minutes. It gets dark. I've been sitting there a long time. And inside my head, inside the brain and heart that belong to me. I've either decided to die or I'm thinking of another letter to the editor. I don't think you could tell by looking at me. Ronald Reagan grinned down from a photograph on the wall that June had brought home on the advent of Charlie's retirement from the newspaper. They're coming to take me away, ha ha, they're coming to take me away. The line stuck in his head, though he hated it. He dreamed it last night, awoke with it ricocheting inside his skull like a maniac racquetball. The rumpled paper on the floor said the Midwestern United States was on orange alert. Highway construction workers, hunters gone berserk. Charlie had scratched that in the margin in red ink. His street lay deserted as far north as Charlie could see. To the south, blocking his view, were those three evergreens planted by the Adolphs for the damn bicentennial. The lawns were muddy, sparse. Robins pecked and bounced and nodded and chirped as if they'd never seen Ohio before. On the pad, Charlie began another letter to Jim, an old newspaper buddy. Charlie printed notes from the perimeter atop the page. Jim now lived in the city, and Charlie remained on the outskirts, the prairie. The local radio announcer in the kitchen told a joke about prisoners in Texas as a lead-in to an oldies set. The mail truck coasted to a stop in front. Charlie shot up straight as if a nun had pointed a ruler his way. Little TV on the dresser in the bedroom played a commercial for the U.S. Marines about young people climbing the mountain of human endeavor with a gun strapped to their backs. Charlie leaned and spotted six more robins moving in next door. He looked back to the set and watched someone he used to be pushing somebody who was once his son, smiling, laughing. June held the damn camera rock steady, just as he'd likely demanded. Golf club plaques, trophies adorned the walls and TV like wallpaper you can't see anymore. Charlie's left forefinger stuck in a word in the 20-pound dictionary in his lap. Maniophobia. The fear of insanity. Keeping his place, he reached to his writing table for a yellow highlighter. His legs quivered under the balancing act. The clock above the dry fish tank marked the seconds. June's cat strolled in from the kitchen to sit in the sunspot in front of the set. Charlie slid the dictionary over and continued his letter. Charlie mentally checked his things in the small bag by the door. Clean socks, underwear, t-shirts for sleeping. No holes. June would have insisted. I saw this young bird in the middle of the highway, Charlie scribbled in handwriting he hated. He'd grown fond of the computer keypad. And I turned around. Imagine me doing that? Superman is not super. He's just some guy who got tired of driving past. Surprisingly, is that right spelling? Doesn't take that much to be super in today's world. That's the sad part. Listen to me. I'm old, though. I can say whatever I want now. Jim, you're getting up there, too. Charlie heard someone whistling expertly the Mayberry tune. The mailbox squeaked. Charlie got up, looked out the door window through the lettering of the John Prine song he'd copied by hand, and scotch taped facing outward. Charlie peeked between the lines of "Your flag, the cow, won't get you into heaven anymore" to see if the mailman was gone. His daughter had sent him the CD for Christmas from Switzerland or Kansas City or, well, whatever. She liked lobbing grenades into Charlie's bunker. She didn't know that Charlie had come to enjoy the music. He looked north and south and stuck his stocking foot out the door onto the wet concrete porch to lean and reach to the black box. He freed the little Mexican flag curled around its stick pole before dragging the bills and flyers inside. Charlie sat and tugged off his wet socks and hung them on the magazine stand next to his chair. He picked at a toe, rubbed his bad knee. To underline a fresh thought, he sat straight to stare at the Christ of the Breadline, the black and white drawing June had got from a used bookstore in town. Screaming fire in a crowded theater? Not the worst thing to do. Be worse to just sit there, right? With a grunt, he reached for the socks. One at a time, he tossed them underhand into the sunspot with the cat now on its back, stretching, reveling in the nothingness of another day in Moonrock Lake. The cat swatted playfully at the invisible dust particles of incoming missiles, death rays, falling doom. Down the line of houses, another mailbox top rang out like a shot from the grassy knoll. How many hundreds of times had the mailman and others before him tromped across this lawn? How many other trivial events had taken place in this nameless epoch in this town that supposedly meant something, were leading towards somewhere, were part of the evolving of something now to something later, much greater? Charlie leaned to his letter to make notes. He would have to rewrite this, he thought, after he wrote, "To not be afraid to die." But what could the hundreds of coffee sessions at the cafe be harbingers of? Enlightenment? What might the labors of Werner across the street be pointing toward? Werner Johnson stared at Charlie, bent to pick an invisible free weeds at the edge of his lawn, then chopped away the vestiges of the last ice age at the end of his drive. A new cosmic awareness? An understanding of parallel universes? Time travel? Is that where all this is headed? How about the ferocious church attendance of most folks around here? Where's that getting us? Comprehension of galaxies? Giving your money to the poor and following him? The meticulous slow driving of Charlie's old friends during daytime? Pinpoint bankbook accounts? The securing of comfortable retirement must be for something. Charlie thought as he rubbed a cold big toe, maybe it all ends here. Would a lizard in the slime be content in knowing that from this ooze, this town, this swamp, would spring forth language and love and physics and hearties? How could he know to just breathe? Charlie watched for another few seconds, the silent show in his big front window. Then turned to the TV screen where he pushed his son on the merry-go-round, climbed aboard, and reached out in horror, eyes and mouth wide as the boy slipped from the edge. Charlie looked away out the window for his children, shook his head, lifted his chin to where his hand could scratch it, then scratched his stomach, closed his eyes, and all around him could feel them closing in on him. His hideout had been compromised. His senses scanned for screeching tires, heaving horses, slamming doors, sweaty saddles, shouts, and running steps and heavy breathing. Somebody cursing while working at throwing a new rope over a tree branch. He looked out at the Papa Robins, frantic, determined to make a life in the new land, and thought how hard he had tried to keep things going. Go to work, pay taxes, use just the right body fragrances, brush after meals, get the insurance and light and water bills in the mail, keep the kids encouraged and June content. The grass got mowed and the church envelopes were ready by the door when they walked out. Those things did not happen. The world would crumble at his feet. The big elm tree in the backyard would topple and cover Charlie. His wife would cry and rock and crunch napkins in her hands, and the children would become crooked branches. Charlie would sit looking out the window, surrounded with beer cans and ashes. He would wander for days in his own mind. The afternoon TV psychologist would feature whole seasons on Charlie. And so he had driven for decades on the right side of the road to keep that from happening. But June was not like that at all. She would have been delighted to live in a tent at the park. Oh my God, it was me, all me. But now they were coming anyway. The droop-eared hounds from Mayberry had the scent of his fetid armpits and crotch and breath and ass. They'd storm from their spots in the shade of the trees on the courthouse lawn. They were on the way, baying down the middle of Annie Avenue. He could feel it in a thousand ways, the way the mailman slammed the lid, how the checkout girls gazed at him over the tops of their glasses, the way things were slipping by little, now that he didn't care. Now that he couldn't conceive of caring. Now that he wondered how anyone could care how their breath or asses or pits smelled. They all knew. It must have been posted on the bulletin board at the grocery store and the library that Charlie did not care anymore. Some wondered if he'd ever really cared. It pissed people off. At 66, you'd finally become the person they always suspected you to be, but they were also relieved to be free to fall on you like a kid whose mother has sent him to the playground on the first day of summer in a new town in plaid shorts. It's a welcome diversion to get somebody from the hundreds of pieces of information folk must process every day, sometimes tragic, but more likely tragically dull. Black above the brown plant said Charlie had successfully completed 35 years at the Moonrock Lake Sentinel. A door slammed. They're late. Oh, Jenny must have been piddling along. She didn't really want to take me. I guess the family elected her. Moonrock Lake Mental Health Institution is famous in Ohio. Say Moonrock Lake to anybody. I've done it myself. They think mental institution. It's weird to be going there. I've talked myself into not being too scared. See, I know why I'm going, and that's the definition of not crazy. They're taking me because of the letters I've been writing to the editor, to my friends, to June, to my brother Walt. Charlie looked at the TV screen, saw it was Fuzz, then to the street, and saw a pickup pulled up in front. So this is how it's going to be. Charlie saw his niece striding up the walk. He went to meet her. She saw the bag. You're all ready? Yes. Use the restroom? Yeah. She poked her sternum with her pointer. Sure, hon. Charlie sat in his chair, reached for the heavy dictionary. Still time to look up one last word he'd been interested in. I-N-I-N-D-I-N-D-U. Indorit. Well, she stood in the middle of the room, hands on narrow hips, brown hair, and a workmanlike ponytail. Her blue uniform pants crisp, not tight. Her light blue water department blouse clean and all business. Jenny, proclaimed the white script, stitching on her breast pocket. She grabbed the bag and pushed the door open for Charlie, waiting for him to check the burners, taps, doors, thermostat, the cat's food. He clicked the TV off, tossed the changer into his chair, let it lie when it bounced onto the floor, pulled the front curtain closed. Thanks, he said, walking past her. He stopped in the doorway, turned around, and looked into what was his home. He sighed. His mouth quaked and his eyes became moist. Charlie turned and walked outside, stopping to straighten again the little green, white, and red flag. He marched down the steps with his head down, a fugitive finally captured. Observation, right? Jenny asked as she followed Charlie down the walk. That's what they say, said Charlie as he sat. Hauled his leg inside with his hand and pulled the passenger door shut. Just tests, I guess. And that's the news from Moonrock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO lone gunmen are about average. And that wraps up another episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. I'd like to remind you, we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, also at revolution.radio. You can find our archive shows and listen live on our show website, newdream.us. Don't forget to write us. Ask us some questions so we can talk about them in that middle segment. That was fun. Write to us, cwg@cwgservices.com or nwestiowa, that's N-W-E-S-T-I-O-W-A, at gmail.com. Thank you for joining us tonight. We hope you'll be back next week and every week. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
Yes, and thank you, Chuck, for all you do, all the interviews, all the technical stuff, everything that makes the show possible. And thank you to our guests, Evie Litwak, Ava Bird, Philip Ferruccio, and Mickey Z in New York City, Los Angeles, in Port Orange. Please visit the New American Dream website where you'll find information about all of our regular guests. I'm pausing here because my mouse is out of batteries, I think. Newdream.us. And I try to use my fingers, and I just can't do it without a mouse. Also, Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N, magazine.us. We didn't mention Frank Cordero tonight, but he is he's on the road. And so he wasn't able to talk to us by phone. He was out of touch. We're going to try and contact Frank next week. And in the meantime, if you'd like to donate to the Des Moines Catholic Worker, write to the Phil Berrigan House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. And next week we'll be talking to Richard Flamer. And here I'm going to mention his address again. Donations can be sent to Richard Flamer at the Chiapas Project, care of Holy Family Catholic Church, 1715 Izzard Street, Omaha, Nebraska, 68102. And when you send to this address, they will make sure that Richard gets it in Chiapas, Mexico. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hawksprung. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Mohammed Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. Good night, Noah Posner. Good night, Crystal Campbell. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
He's a real nowhere man, sitting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he's going to. Isn't he a bit like you and me? Nowhere man, please listen. You don't know what you're missing. Nowhere man, the world is at your command. He's as blind as he can be, just sees what he wants to see. Nowhere man can you see me at home. Nowhere man, don't worry, take your time, don't hurry, leave it all till somebody else lends you a hand. Doesn't have a point of view, knows not where he's going to. Isn't he a bit like you and me? Nowhere man, please listen. You don't know what you're missing. Nowhere man, the world is at your command. He's a real nowhere man, waiting in his nowhere land, making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Making all his nowhere plans for nobody. Good night, everyone. Thanks again for joining us. We hope to hear you again.
For tuning in to Revolution Radio. Here at Revolution Radio, we are listener-sponsored and commercial-free, but there still are bills to pay. In order to raise some needed funds to cover the cost, our station is offering a silver special. In the continental United States for a $60 donation, or in Alaska, Hawaii, or Canada for a $70 donation, we will send you an uncirculated 2018 1-ounce pure silver eagle. The $70 donation, the extra 10 is to cover shipping, by the way, outside of the continental United States. When making the donation, you must put Silver Eagle promo in the notes on the donation. And thank you for tuning in to Revolution Radio at revolution.radio and freedomslips.com. Without you, there is no less. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
This is the People's War. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it, then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning! Warning!
We gotta stop them! They're gonna kill us all!
See how the trouble you've started? Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone, or human beings!
Time when the operation of the machine becomes so obvious. Makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you got it.
Right, you tell them I'm coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio! The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts